text 51551. Today with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Many people will be aware that the HPV vaccine has been available for girls of school-going age since 2010. But from September, it will also be offered to 13-year-old boys. The extension of the programme is being undertaken in a bid to eradicate the major strains of the human papillomavirus, which cause cervical cancer and several other cancers. Well, joining me now to talk about this and to answer everything parents need to know about the vaccine is Dr. Killian de Gascon, as consultant virologist and director of UCD's National Virus Reference Laboratory. Thanks so much for coming in this morning, Killian.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate that. Now, listen, many people are already familiar with the programme for girls. Why is the HSE making this vaccine available to boys for the first time?
So I suppose there are two main approaches. Obviously, cervical cancer is the cancer we most associate with HPV. But since the initial work that identified that association sort of in the 70s and 80s, it's become more apparent that HPV also plays a role in a significant number of other cancers, specifically oropharyngeal cancer, anal, vulval, vaginal, and penile. And what this vaccine will do for boys is that it will protect them directly against penile cancer, anal cancer, and oropharyngeal cancer. But it will also indirectly help girls as well, because it will reduce the amount of circulating HPV in the population. And then thirdly, at a population level, it will, as you said, help us eradicate, because we're unlikely to get to a level of vaccine uptake in girls only to facilitate the complete eradication of the high-risk HPV types.
Now, I suppose there are still some parents out there that may have concerns about the vaccine. Is it safe?
Yes, it's a completely safe vaccine. It's very effective and very safe. And there have been over 100 million people vaccinated worldwide with the vaccine at this point. And there has been no evidence or no suggestion of any illnesses or any adverse events sort of associated with it.
And should people expect to get any side effects? Like if you're at home now and you have a 13-year-old boy and you think, yeah, no, I'm going to do this. Any side effects that you might think of?
No. It's a very safe vaccine. In essence, there may be sort of minor irritation at the site of the injection or something along those lines, but certainly nothing serious.
So how is it administered, Killian, and how many doses might someone need?
So when we first started administering the vaccine, when the evidence first came out, it was a 3-dose schedule, but then ongoing sort of evidence and research demonstrated that actually 2 doses were sufficient. So from September, our girls currently are getting 2 doses, and from September, boys will receive the same 2-dose schedule.
And is the idea that you would go to your GP to get it, or will it be done through schools?
My understanding is that it will be done through a school-based programme. And right. It's important to highlight that that is a really positive thing in this country, because we all know that there are certain cohorts who will have difficulty accessing healthcare, whereas the vast majority of children will go to school. So therefore, it's a really fair and equitable way to provide vaccination. And I think sort of the HSE and the National Immunisation Office sort of needs to be praised for that approach, because as I said, it is one of the most fair ways of delivering vaccines to a population.
And I suppose the uptake of the HPV vaccine, it's risen to 70%, up by 20% over the past years. Do you believe the remainder of people who don't get it, it's that they don't trust the advice in the vaccine? Or are they just indifferent to the need for it? They don't realise why it's so important?
I think there are probably a couple of aspects to it. I think there's probably a cohort of people who will never get the vaccine for whatever reason. I think there's probably a cohort of people who maybe feel they don't have enough information. And I think that's on us as a profession to be better, to make ourselves more available for programmes like this and to make ourselves more available to media, and also to speak out on social media and other platforms to highlight the safety of the vaccine. And I think there are other people that maybe there's a lack of awareness just because they feel, well, the risks of sort of cancer are low. And I think that might be a challenge, because cervical cancer obviously has had very high profile in recent years, and it still does account for the vast majority of HPV-associated cancers. However, with the success of the HPV vaccine program, it's likely that oropharyngeal cancer will overtake cervical cancer as the greatest burden of HPV-associated cancer probably in the next 5 to 10 years.
I've got a 13-year-old son. I was talking to somebody last night. I think there is a slight concern about why the vaccine is administered to someone, I suppose, so young, because you don't expect your 13-year-old boy to be sexually active. I mean, why is it given, Killian, to such young adolescents?
Yeah, and I think that's important. I think we need to, in a sort of sort of old-fashioned Catholic Ireland, I think we need to move away from sort of the sexually transmitted part of this. Like, this is about preventing cancer. So we do know from an immunological perspective, the immune response is better the younger you give it. So that's why, so for example, just even in current guidance, if somebody starts the program over 15 years of age, they still require 3 doses to get a sufficient immune response. But the second issue is that we do know that the vaccine, this is a preventive vaccine, so it works better when it's administered before people acquire the viruses. So therefore, we know that at 12 to 13, it's likely that the majority of children will not have had their sexual debut at that age, and that's the best time to give a preventive vaccine.
Fair enough. How is HPV transmitted primarily, and would, you know, abstinence prevent people from contracting it?
Not necessarily. So I suppose there are over 200 types of human papillomavirus. So it causes common warts that we get on our hands and our feet. People will be familiar with verruca. Yeah. It also causes genital warts in around the genital areas. And then it goes on, there are certain, sort of about 40 of them infect the genital tract, and 13 of those are high risk, so they're capable of causing cancer. Transmission, generally speaking, is direct contact. So it's either skin to skin, sort of genital contact in the course of sort of sexual interaction. But it does sort of penetrative intercourse is not required. So that's something that people need to be aware of. And also, condoms do not provide complete protection against transmission, because obviously the condoms don't cover every part of the genital region that's involved. And then we've also it can oropharyngeal cancer obviously involves sort of oral anal contact or sort of oral vaginal contact. So there is generally speaking a risk that if people think abstinence will work, it's not going to work. This vaccine is really there. And as I said, we need to move the focus away from the sexual activity to the fact that we're trying to prevent cancer. Like, because this is, I think this is a really good news story. This is something we've been crying out for years as a profession, as a society, a cure for cancer. This is in essence what we have in this vaccine. It will prevent huge numbers of cancer across girls and boys for a whole generation, and it is potentially possible that we will eradicate it.
Well, and on that point, I mean, as you know, we're screening this country for cervical cancer. Why not screen maybe for many of the other precancers where HPV is a factor?
So the problem is we don't have a good screening test yet for oropharyngeal or for anal cancer. Now, there's an awful lot of work and sort of research ongoing in this area, but we're quite fortunate that with cervical cancer, we know a huge amount about the natural history of the disease. We know that there are precancerous lesions that can be detected through screening, and we know that generally speaking, the time between infection and development of malignancy is between 10 years and 30 years. Mm. So it gives us time to implement a screening program, and gives us time to identify those precancerous lesions before they become aggressive. But the difficulty is, for the other cancers at this point in time, we don't have screening programs.
You may not be able to answer these. Just our listeners to them said, my daughter didn't have the HPV vaccine while in school. She's now 21 and thinking about having it. Is it still worthwhile? Will it be very expensive?
Yes, it's absolutely still worthwhile.
Great.
Because the chances of her having acquired all 7 of the high risk types that are in the Gardasil 9, which is the new vaccine that's going to be used, is very slim. Okay. So that she'll definitely receive some benefit, but it's likely that if she has acquired, she won't necessarily receive protection against the viruses to which she's already been exposed. I don't know the cost of the vaccine offhand, unfortunately. I think it is certainly worth doing as far as I'm aware, within the current program, it won't be offered to children at that age. Unless she was in school as part of the catch-up program, there may be an opportunity to go back, but I'm not sure.
Okay, they can investigate. And another listener, Orla, says, hi, Miriam, I've been trying to access the HPV vaccine for my teenage boys for the past year to no avail. My GP just says it's not available. My pharmacist says they will order it for me if I get a prescription. My GP is unwilling to administer it. My boys are 16 and 19. Could you advise?
Again, it is a challenge, and I suppose, again, that comes back to our sort of communication and us informing our GPs. But the guidance at the moment will be sort of the school-based program.
Okay.
However, it is still worth giving. And again, I suppose we have to be cognizant of living in an era of finite resources. So the HSE can't pay for everything, nor can we as a taxpayer afford to pay for everything. But the best yield is from sort of children at school going age before their sexual debut for boys and girls. However, it should certainly be available thereafter. And if the GP wants to contact me, I can certainly sort of give him that advice.
Okay, great. Finally, Colleen, do you think there is a trust issue with doctors maybe in the HSE? I mean, we've recently seen people lose some faith in the cervical cancer screening program. Do you think trust is still an issue?
Yeah, I think it probably is. It's like traditionally, I suppose, you know, nurses and doctors and healthcare professionals would have been held up as one of sort of the most trusted members of society, up there with, I suppose, priests and broadcasters. But in recent years, I think we've seen people move away from healthcare professionals, perhaps sort of to online sources, and they're taking advice from strangers rather than taking advice from their general practitioners or practice nurses or their hospital doctors. And I think, again, a lot of that is on us as a profession. We need to be better, we need to be more open, we need to be more available, and we need to interact with the patients, and we need to encourage them to ask questions. But that does come down to the system as well. We need to have time to give to patients, because you know yourself from outpatient clinics in the public sector, they are oversubscribed and doctors don't have time. So if you can find somebody online who will spend 45 minutes talking to you about the HPV vaccine, but yet when you go to your hospital appointment or your GP, they only have 10 minutes or 5 minutes, then is it any wonder that you're going to sort of talk to the person who will have time available? But that requires sort of reformation sort of the system, really.
Actually, finally, to pay tribute to Laura Brennan, I mean, her face is the first thing you see when you go onto the HSE website section on the HPV vaccine. She, of course, died earlier this year following a battle with cervical cancer. How important do you think her advocacy was in raising awareness of the HPV vaccine?
It was incredibly important, and I think like she has to take responsibility for the increase in uptake rates from 50% to 70%. I think ultimately that all comes down to Laura. But it is about having, it's about having that story that people can, parents can relate to.
That's a wonderful tribute to her, though, and her family.
Yeah, no, she's a legend.
And listen, Killian de Gascon, thanks so much for coming in this morning. After the break, summer music.
Today with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.